love Fiesta Fridays with the playoffs 2 days away.
What better way to kick off this party of a weekend than with a Fiesta Friday?
I feel like we should be watching game one in Havana.
It's true. Have a Cuba Libre?
Yeah.
I'm going to have a big stogie.
Prior to the revolution.
Are you guys growing playoff beards? I'm going to grow a playoff beard. I hope it's long. Yeah. The last time I did it was 2015. And it
you know who's
long.
Got a playoff beard? Castro.
It's true.
He's getting into it.
Past tense.
Yeah.
Had.
Well, no playoff beards for you guys? No? Am I the only one?
I don't know. I might.
I got to shave mine first.
Yeah, you got to shave first, of course, for that to start off.
No, I don't want to start from fresh. This took way too long.
No, you got it.
Yeah.
No,
I'm still that patchy.
He started growing that back in 2015.
It's true.
Canucks.
I took a long time to get to. I can't go through another 9 years. You are listening
that
to
that. Beard has been rebuilding more than the Canucks.
It's true. So many teardowns.
Beard's been through several death marches.
It's true. It made it through the pandemic somehow. You are listening to the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Halford and Brough in the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are in hour two of the program. AJ from AJ's Pizza on East Broadway is going to join us in just a moment here. Hour two of this program is brought to you by Primetime Craft Beer. Meticulously brewed for quality and taste, Primetime is full flavor without compromise. You can get some at a liquor store near you, or you can visit the brewery to see how it's made.
We are coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for?
Kintec. To the phone lines we go. We are joined now by AJ from AJ's Pizza on East Broadway. Try AJ's traditional New York pizza or sink into their famous Detroit pizza. Don't ask Andy what the name is. Only at AJ's Pizza. Order online at AJ's.pizza. AJ joins us now on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. What up, AJ?
What is going on? Exciting times. Christmas Eve, right, for everybody.
So not only is it the start of the NHL playoffs, but yesterday the NHL announced that they're going to have a whole new team, sort of. The Utah chapter of the NHL is now underway. Now, here's the thing. Utah owner Ryan Smith was a ball hockey aficionado, a roller hockey aficionado back in the day. I only bring this up because this is just one of the many things that AJ has in common with Ryan Smith. Not only are you both the owners of very profitable businesses, you were also both apparently roller hockey all-stars back in your youth. You said, and I quote, "I need 12 seconds to tell everyone about my roller hockey, my legit roller hockey prowess." So I found a way to tie it in. Now you get to tell it.
I love it. That's great. Well, I was known as the Wayne Gretzky of Brooklyn.
Okay.
I scored 49 goals in a 12-game season.
But, hey, dog, what's the roller hockey scene like in Brooklyn?
It was amazing. It was a rough league, though.
You don't say.
NHL. Yeah.
I feel like you play two sports. I play roller hockey and I play handball.
Yeah, that's about it. Well, there's no ice there, right? I mean, it's zero, just the backs.
I do want to say that you delivered the "I was known as the Wayne Gretzky of roller hockey" with the seriousness that leads me to suggest that wasn't put on for show. That was so very cool. Okay, this weekend, huge weekend, obviously. So AJ's Pizza on East Broadway, Sunday, setting up ahead of the Canucks game, happy hour all day, correct?
Yes, all day.
And here's the thing. Last week, the contest with the Halbro listeners went so well that we're running it back and we're doing it again. Now, the trick this week, and this is another reason that I brought up Utah, you guys want to know the most creative name for Utah's pending NHL team.
You can, 100%.
Yeah, you can get at AJ's on Instagram, send him a DM, or you can email it to info@AJ's Pizza. And a reminder, we'll reset this contest at the end of the show for anyone that may miss it. But any listeners out there, send it along either via Instagram DM or email to AJ's Pizza on East Broadway. The winner, the most creative name for Utah's team name, will get a free tab at AJ's, not just for the winner, but for the winner and a friend. What a contest. AJ, that's pretty awesome, man.
Yeah, Therese is the one who's really the business person. She comes up with all that stuff. So
this is
great.
True. And I know she's listening. So, Therese, very well done. Thank you. So, for a second consecutive week, visit them this weekend. Visit them online. AJ's Brooklyn Pizza at Instagram. AJ, thanks for doing this today, bud. We really appreciate
it. Thank you. Enjoy the weekend.
Yeah, good too. Good luck. Thanks. That's AJ's Pizza on East Broadway. Try AJ's traditional New York pizza or sink into their famous Detroit pizza only at AJ's Pizza. Order online at AJ's.pizza. And a reminder, go to their Instagram page, set up your contest entry via DM or email them.
Let's do some Ask Us Anythings. We need some more Ask Us Anythings into the Dunbar Lumber text line, 650-650. Dunbar Lumber, with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street, Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center, or Beautiful in Vancouver, online at dunbarlumber.com. Justin in East Van, Ask Us Anything. What is the greatest Canucks playoff game at Rogers Arena? So I think in Canucks... Yeah, it's the Slay the Dragon one.
Come on.
Yeah, it's got to be, right?
Yeah, it's not even close.
What's the greatest playoff game in Vancouver
history?
I would say Game 6 against the Rangers at the Coliseum.
You know he'll play. He'll play on crutches. Yeah.
No, it's just, I mean, that game was incredible.
I know, but that was the iconic photo and moment and leading. Yeah, that could be. Oof, that's a tough
one. I think it was. Wow, God, the moment, though, when Burroughs scored. Nothing will ever match that moment.
Those are the two. Like they're up here, and you have to be watching the stream to see the.
Yeah, Slay the Dragon beats it out because it was a win.
Better than the Game 2 OT winner.
Oh, Game 6.
Series win is what I mean.
Yeah.
Like it was a series win. The elation,
the wraparound on Thomas, better than that game. Everyone thought, you know, at the time it was going to be
short answer. Yes. Long answer. Yes.
I mean the other one that comes to mind is that epic overtime game against Dallas it was kind of like we were like praying for that game to end.
Yeah, it was
please
like,
God, just someone score, even Dallas, come on, let's get out of here.
At this point I don't even care, it's like game one, who cares.
The Slay the Dragon series win, I don't know how you could top that.
Well, 94, one win away from the Stanley Cup, winning game 6 at home to force the game 7.
Yeah, it's close.
Linden bleeding out, McLean hugging him because they're exhausted. Yeah. That
one of the most iconic pictures
of all
time.
That's the most iconic picture in Canucks history.
Agreed.
Right? So the fact that came from game 6, I would say that you can't really do like a Mount Rushmore of greatest playoff games because I think there's two that stand alone, and it's that game. And then it's Slay the Dragon in 2011.
From Rager, Ask Us Anything, what do you guys think the NHL would say if a guy like Elon Musk wanted to own a franchise? And what city would you choose for Musk to run a team out of? I think they'd be absolutely thrilled if Elon Musk wanted to own an NHL team. Yes, he might do some controversial things, but it's, you know, Elon Musk.
Making the gestures.
The arena, it's not just the money. It's
would the arena randomly explode, though? Like, would we have to worry about that?
It's accelerators stuck down.
I think the team would be
can't
on,
get it wet.
You know what? He wants to go to Mars, put the team on Mars.
Yeah, there you go.
Tough travel schedule for sure, right? They might have to have 2 days off between, you know, the games 2 and 3. But, put it on Mars. Like, challenge him, right? He wants
the
to.
The net keeps floating away.
First league to be in Vegas, first league to go to Mars.
Yeah. Or the moon, if you want to, you know, I don't know. That would seem kind of
weak.
That's
the next outdoor class.
It would seem kind of weak.
Hey, as the old saying goes, aim for Mars, land on the moon.
Yeah.
That's not how that saying goes.
Is that an old saying?
Let's look up.
Shoot for the stars, you'll land on the moon. Something like that?
Something like that. I don't know. We don't do that on the show.
No. I don't want to land on the moon.
We basically are like, shoot for somewhere in the atmosphere and land in an alley somewhere.
It's the Simpsons. I aim so low, nobody will ever notice you.
Let's talk about the game last night. The Canucks lose in Winnipeg. There were two things that stood out to me. One was Thatcher Demko. I thought he looked good. And that's the most important thing. I was actually wondering if they might pull him for the third period, but they kept him in there for the entire game. And pretty much exactly what Shorty said earlier, like, he looked good. Yeah, he made a bit of a stick-handling blunder, but I'm not going to put that on a potential knee injury. That was just, you know, it happened, and it happens in games.
Maybe he's got a hand injury.
Laddie, did you think his mobility looked pretty good? Like, he looked sharp, right?
Yeah, he looked very sharp.
He looked big in there. The I know, you like. Okay. I like that.
This conversation's over. he looked fine. Yeah, no, he rested any doubts that I had about his health coming as a factor.
Right. And the other thing I would notice, and it was funny, Halford told me that when he was talking with Shorty, and he was prepping for the interview, and Shorty was like, well, Bruff's probably going to ask me about Petey. Mm-hmm. So out of spite, I didn't.
Attaboy.
Is that spite? Yeah, but I did notice that Petey last night had a number of opportunities to shoot the puck, like prime shooting opportunities. And believe me, I'm not the guy that's like, you got to shoot, just put it on net, just shoot. Like, I'm actually opposite that guy normally. I'm like, because I think, you know, especially on a power play, you have to work east-west. You have to be deceptive. You have to make an unexpected pass here and there. Like, you have to work the puck around. But there were a couple times where Petey had the puck after the puck had been worked around. And, like, the whole idea would be, like, okay, well, now you're in this position to shoot. The shooting lane is open. Let it fly. Nope. Didn't shoot the puck a number of times. And the last three games, two shots on goal for Petey. So you can call me the number one Petey hater in the market, or the guy, you know, I guess Donnie brings up Petey a lot too. They're the guy who's always asking questions about Petey, but we are now going into a series against the Nashville Predators where the Canucks should have a significant advantage over the Preds down the middle. They may even be able to get some softer matchups for the Pettersson line if they put the Lindholm line or the Miller line out against the Ryan O'Reilly line. This should be a series where Pettersson is in a good position to do some good things. We have seen a few good things out of Pettersson in the last little while. His line had a nice goal the other night that ended up Petey passing it to Hoglander, and that was a nice pass, and Hoglander buries it. And then about, you know, 5 or 6 games ago, I remember Petey ripped one home on the power play, and I'm like, oh, I wonder if that's going to give him the confidence to start shooting on the power play. Like, that's the Petey. Like, you need to shoot the puck, you know? Like, just put it on net, and, you know, if you've got that shooting lane, then take it. And he did, and he ripped it home, and it was great. And I thought, okay, maybe he's going to build off of this, but 3 games, 2 shots on goal. Is this just the Petey hater?
No, I don't think so. And I also think that we properly named you the number one Petey discourse driver in the market. Things that I noticed last night. I understand that last night was a bit of a mishmash. You know, there was guys missing out of the lineup. The pairings were different. The lines were different. I did not love that there was too many men on the ice penalties, because it kind of brought back some of the issues that, let's be honest, never really went away this year. The Canucks finished the season with 14 bench minors. That's the most, and all the bench minors were for too many men. I went back and looked. There was one penalty for chirping this year, but Dakota Joshua got it from the penalty box, not from the...
Okay.
So all of them were too many men on the ice. Their changes were an issue. And I remember Tockett said, I think it was right around the All-Star break, he's like, we've already hit our quota for the year. Then they went over that quota. Of all the playoff teams, they're the only one that's in that territory. They had the third most. So it was Arizona and Anaheim were the other two that led with too many men on the ice penalties. The only reason I bring this up is that you can't do it in the playoffs. It's such a killer when you give away those, like, if you earn a penalty, like you're slashing a guy or you take him down on a breakaway, whatever, like you're trying to prevent something from happening, the needless, soft, giveaway, cheap power plays in a tight series, they can really tilt the scales one way or another, because the mental behind them is the tough part, where it's like, man,
that was dumb.
That was shooting ourselves in the foot. That was an unforced error. That was something that we had complete control over.
Yeah.
As opposed to, like, Ryan O'Reilly was driving the net and I had to haul him down, that kind of thing. Other thing that I noticed last night, I mentioned this with Shorty, I am pleasantly surprised with how Lindholm has looked in his 4 games back in the lineup.
Mm-hmm.
I think that those 4 games, maybe the most effective that he's played or that he's looked since he's been in. I know he scored a couple goals in his debut, but I look at it and there's good face-off prowess. I mentioned it with Shorty. I think that there's got to be some correlation between killing off 14 consecutive penalties going into the postseason and him coming back in.
That's a great sign.
I also think that if he's going, find me another team that can go 1-2-3 down the middle as good as Pettersson, Miller, Lindholm. I honestly, find me one. That is their biggest advantage over Nashville right now, without question. Without question. If you're looking at...
Well, if they went up against Colorado, you'd be like, you know, they might not have a player as good as McKinnon, but their depth is superior to Colorado's.
No, honestly, find me another team right now that can go 1-2-3 that talented if Lindholm is on his game at center.
And if... You know who's on his game.
But I'm just saying, PD finished the year as...
not a good player?
A 90-point guy.
Okay.
Yeah. Just listen.
Okay.
He got it. I don't know if you saw this.
Well, how's he trending?
He got an A grade from The Athletic on his report card.
Which I disagree with. There's grade inflation.
So he finished the year on a high. Contextually, he's not injured. He had 90 points, and there's something more to give. With Lindholm, the concern was, is it a fit? Is he hurt? Like, we never saw proof of concept from Lindholm, right? You understand what I'm saying? Like, Petey did not finish the year great, but Petey did great things this year.
Yeah, he just hasn't trended well.
Right. Lindholm had never done anything that gave me hope that he was going to be a contributing factor for the Canucks. Halfway through the... And remember when we said, I can't believe he's played 22 games. It feels like it's been 10.
Mm-hmm.
Like, by the 22-game mark, I had legitimate concerns that, one, he was healthy, and two, he was going to be able to contribute significantly on a team that wanted to go places in the playoffs. You get what I mean?
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
I'm not worried about Lindholm on that line. I think that line is going to be a huge advantage for the Canucks.
Look, the only thing I'm
worried... Lindholm, Joshua, and Garland, I think that's a really, really solid third line. And frankly, that's why I wanted Tockett to go back to that line on the third line, because I also think it makes the fourth line better. Because now you're looking at the fourth line and you're going, wow, like I actually kind of like the potential of Bluger, Lafferty, and Pod Colson in there. Like that has the potential to be a good fourth line.
I'm going to drop a look on you, though.
What I just keep coming back onto is, like, you have to, you know, if you're going to have an advantage of that third line being able to take on the other team's one or two best lines, then you're... in theory, top lines have to take advantage of that.
Yeah, and you get some softer matchups too. I mean, who do you line match if you've got a shutdown center right now? Are you going after Petey's line, or are you going you're going after Miller's line?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then you got the third line, which is the first line, and the first line, maybe the second line. Also, I want to say my look with Lindholm, where you're like, I'm confident with Lindholm centering that third line. Look, I am too, but it's pretty obvious that he's got a nasty wrist injury.
Pedersen?
No, Lindholm.
Oh, Lindholm. Yeah, we knew that. It was a wrist injury.
So you're like, I'm confident. I don't have any worries there. Mine is the injury, the wrist, right? Like, I mean, it's hard.
He ripped a pretty good slapper at one point.
I know, but he also had to take how many games off to get it back to health?
Mm-hmm.
How many games did he take off? 7?
I wish both their names were in Elias.
I know.
Swedish guys with wrist problems.
It's true.
Someone texted in, do you think PD is still nursing a wrist injury? And we're at the point now where people, like, I had someone texting me that said, I wonder if his back is hurting. And I'm kind of like, you know, first of all, if it is an injury, then why did he play last night when there was an opportunity to give him some rest? You know, I don't know. That's never a good sign, though, when you're like, he must be injured, right? Because surely he wouldn't be playing like this if he were injured. I think that's an acknowledgement that he's not playing up to his level.
Oh, man, if he is healthy. Like you said,
I think it's all between the ears.
Like, I said the same thing that you did last night when he had that chance to shoot it there and he didn't. I'm like, come on, man, it was right there for you. You could have ripped it. And for whatever reason, he chose not to. And it's like, that is totally a confidence thing. So hopefully he finds it.
It just seems like such a sensitive, I mean, this is stating the obvious, such a sensitive topic in this market.
How far do you want to talk about it, right? Best player, like, is not their best player, or one of their best players is not their best player.
Yeah, and you just signed him to a massive contract.
Yeah.
And you know, nobody's...
For next year. He's not making $11.6 million next year.
He's not making $4 either, right? He's still making a pretty good chunk of change, and the Canucks have an opportunity to do something in these playoffs. They're favored to win the first round, and then you'd be down to the final 8 teams if they do that, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know none of us went into this season with Stanley Cup expectations. I think, you know, Shorty said, I think this season has already been a success, and I get it. Like, from, you know, you would, if someone told you that this would be what the Canucks did this year, you'd be like, yeah, sign me up for it. Hockey's fun in Vancouver again. But then again, you look at this team and you look at the UFAs that they have to re-sign, and you're kind of like, I don't want to just go into this season with like, well, happy to be here, right?
Yeah.
You look around the NHL and we're just, you're talking about down the middle with the Canucks. You got these, you've got down the middle. Who can match what the Canucks have? Well, look at what they've got on the back end, too. They got a Norris Trophy winner. Look at what they've got in goal. They got Thatcher Demko, who was in the Vezina race until he got hurt and might still be a finalist. Like, maybe we should be looking at bigger things. You look around the league, and who are you really, really, really scared of in the NHL?
Well, in the first round, for now anyway, it is the Nashville Predators. You have to fear every opponent. It's the only way you'll respect them and then ultimately beat them. We're going to be joined by Robbie Stanley from 102.5 The Game in Nashville. He's also the Nashville Predators correspondent for NHL.com. We talked to him a couple weeks ago. Now we're at Mortal Enemies. Actually, Robbie's a really good guy. I'm happy to have him on the show. He's going to join us next to break down the Canucks' first round series against the Nashville Predators. That's coming up on the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Jamie Dodd
and Thomas Drantz.
Get your daily dose of Canucks talk with us weekdays from 12 to 2 on Sportsnet 650.
Or catch up on demand through your favorite podcast app.
Tommy Novak working down low. Evangelista behind the net. Twists it back over for Forsberg. Plays it. He scores! Philip Forsberg has set a new Nashville Predators record for goals in a season.
Senor Forsberg and Fuego. You're listening to the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. Halford and Bruff the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. Fiesta Fridays with a Philip Forsberg goal call. Ah,
I don't know about that.
It's just like they drew it up in broadcasting school, folks. You just mishmash all of your stuff together.
Nothing says Fiesta like a little bit of hockey.
Halford and Bruff of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. I mentioned that already. This hour of the program is brought to you by Primetime Craft Beer. Cerveza, if you will. Primetime is meticulously brewed for quality and taste. It's full flavor without compromise. You can get some at a liquor store near you, or you can visit the brewery and see how it's made. Our next guest, often a friend of the program, but I guess for the next 7 to 10 days, we are now enemies. He is host of Robbie and Rex Road on 102.5 The Game in Nashville. He is the Predators correspondent for NHL.com. He is Robbie Stanley. He joins us now on the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. Morning, Robbie. How are you?
I'm doing good. You guys have got me in the mood for a fiesta now, so I'm doing even better.
Yeah, there's a lot of different conflicting things going on here on the show. We got all the Caliente music, but we've got this big, important, fundamentally altering playoff series on the horizon. I want to start with what fans and media are thinking locally in Nashville, because as I understand it, there might be some similarities here, whereas a lot of people, fans and media in Vancouver, were kind of hoping that the Canucks would land Nashville in the opening round. Were there fans and media in Nashville that were hoping that the Preds would land Vancouver in the opening round?
Yeah, absolutely. I think when you looked at the Predators' options, it was either going to be the Dallas Stars, Vancouver, or I guess if Edmonton caught Vancouver, it would be the Oilers. Well, I could tell you, Edmonton was dead last on that list, because every time Leon Draisaitl plays against the Predators, he turns into Wayne Gretzky and Mario Lemieux combined and just absolutely destroys them. So they wanted no part of the Edmonton Oilers. Obviously, I mean, the last time they saw Dallas, they got beat 9-2 by the Stars, and the Stars have been humming along pretty good here. So, you know, I don't think it was looking at Vancouver and saying, yes, we're like overly excited to play the Vancouver Canucks. But I think of the options, like the Predators felt like were on the table, their fan base for sure wanted Vancouver. I've seen the Vancouver fan stuff that Predators fans have pointed out to me. So it looks like both fan bases getting what they wanted in this matchup.
Preseason expectations compared to what the Preds actually did in the season, how different were they?
They're pretty significantly different. And, you know, Barry Trotz came in this last offseason. He kind of gutted the team, and they began that process with David Poile last year, trading away, you know, Mikael Granlund and Matthias Ekholm, and then Duchesne and Johansson out the door this summer, and brought in O'Reilly and Shen and Nyquist and really just kind of changed the environment, changed the culture of the team. And the expectations heading into the year were for them to be, you know, probably a team that was right there on the bubble, but ultimately fell short of the playoffs. I think a lot of Predators fans thought that it was going to be kind of a youth movement this year. And for the most part, we didn't really see that. Like, they brought in O'Reilly, and Nyquist played the best hockey of his career. And the underlying numbers tell you that, I mean, it's a pretty darn good hockey team. It's not just like it's some fluke in the second half of the season or that they've been riding a hot goalie. Like, they've played really well. And I think that has taken a lot of people by surprise, including people here locally. And now the intrigue is, okay, well, what does all that mean by the time the playoffs come around and in this first-round matchup against Vancouver? But there's no question this Predators team has, I think, pretty significantly exceeded expectations.
You know, the one thing I love about the especially the opening round of the playoffs is you get some lead time up and you really get to sink your teeth into the opponent and you get to know their stories and you get to focus on the minutiae. Like, I would otherwise never talk about Gustav Nyquist on my radio show. Yeah. But now, like, I have to, because all I remember from the offseason was the buyouts with Johansson and Duchesne, and then they went out and they signed, and it was O'Reilly and Luke Shen that kind of got the headlines. Yep. Because they were supposed to be the new culture setters and everything else. I almost forgot that they also signed Nyquist. I think part of the reason I did was it was such an under-the-radar signing. It was 2 years for like $6.5 million. People were like, he's Gustav Nyquist. And then he goes out and at 34 has the best offensive season of his career. He was almost a point-a-game guy this year. How did he do it? Was it all just about finding some chemistry with Forsberg and Ryan O'Reilly?
Yeah, well, to that point, I remember they signed him, and my thought process was, huh, okay, well, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And then I just kind of moved on with my day.
Right.
And, you know, he spent the first, like, I think a couple of weeks just kind of bouncing around on the, you know, the second and third line here in Nashville. And then one day early in November, they moved him up with Forsberg and O'Reilly, and that's where he's been ever since. And for whatever reason, he just seems to have a vision with those two where he just finds them. And he's played extremely well, 75 points in 81 games. He scored 23 goals this year, like you mentioned, at the age of 34. And, you know, he went through a couple of different point streaks. Like, I think he had like a 9-game point streak, and then he followed it up a couple weeks later with like a 7-game point streak. And I was like, well, this is a great story. It's nice that Gus Nyquist has gotten hot, but at some point that's going to cool off. And it just never did. Like, he played that well all season long. He was an incredible weapon on their power play in terms of just the playmaking ability. And I think what's kind of stood out to me is, I guess I never realized how good of a skater he is, but he's a really good skater. And I think he fits in really well with, you know, O'Reilly like to get to the front of the net. Forsberg can do a little bit of everything. And he has been, in some ways, kind of like the catalyst that's made that line go. He's been really, really effective. And it's taken me by surprise is probably not strong enough word. It's been shocking to see the way that he's played.
Hey, Robbie, is it fair to say that the Canucks have a matchup advantage down the middle when they go JT Miller, Elias Pettersson, and Elias Lindholm versus the Preds? Or am I underselling what the Preds have at center?
No, I think you're exactly right. I think that's a clear matchup advantage for Vancouver in this series. And look, Ryan O'Reilly obviously is still a really good player. He's a former Conn Smythe winner. He's excellent. He's been excellent for the Predators this year. So I think he's in really good shape. I think, you know, if the Predators kind of building forward here as they're looking at their lineup, the one area they probably really need to improve at is down the middle. And, you know, Novak's a good player. Novak is really good offensively. And when he gets the puck, he can make some good plays out there. He's a bit of a liability in his own end. And Colton Sissons is kind of like the opposite. Like, Colton Sissons is really good in his own end. He can make plays every now and again offensively, but probably looking for a little bit more of an offensive punch there. So other than O'Reilly, I think it's going to be really interesting to see how the Predators match up in this series. But I don't think there's any question. Like, down the middle, I think there's a pretty distinct advantage for Vancouver.
We're speaking to Robbie Stanley from 102.5 The Game in Nashville. He's also the Preds correspondent for NHL.com. Canucks Preds begin their series 7 o'clock Sunday night from Rogers Arena. Robbie, as we dig deeper into the minutiae, can you tell listeners a little bit more about Jeremy Lauzon? The only reason I bring him up is he set an NHL record for hits this season, 383, the most ever by a single player recorded since the NHL started keeping the stat.
Yeah, he's really added that physical element and really taken it to a new level this year. He and Alex Carrier have been the defense pairing together for most of the season. And look, Lozon's had a breakout year. It's not just the hits, but he's played really well defensively, and he's been involved in the play. And I think as much as anybody that I've seen, he has really benefited from the system that Andrew Burnett wants to play. I mean, it's been a system that's fit him to a T. I think he's a better skater than most people realize. And hey, look, you know, a lot of times, just to be honest with you, I look at these hits and I see people who accumulate a ton of hits. And my first thought is, well, that must mean they don't have the puck a whole lot because you're out there chasing the puck and you're hitting people. That really, for the most part, hasn't been the case with Jeremy Lozon. Now, I will say Lozon and Carrier, I think their play dropped off a bit toward the end of the regular season, and I'm interested to see if they can pick it back up. But he's been a really physical force out there, but he's not a liability defensively either. I think he skates pretty well, moves pretty well for his size. So it's been a little bit of a revelation for him this year. You know, I didn't even have him penciled into the lineup to begin the year. I thought he would be their seventh defenseman. Turns out that's been Dante Fabbro and Tyson Barrie, for the most part, have been the two guys out. And Lozon, I think, deserves a lot of credit for how he's elevated his game beyond just the hits. But there's no question he's pretty much smashing everything that moves out there. He's hitting, and that's been a big part of his game this year.
Has the whole U2 thing been overdone, or is that a real thing and a real factor in the season?
I don't know that it's been overdone. I think that part of it, it's a couple things. I think you combine the U2 thing, but also like what happened that led to the U2 thing. I think they were so embarrassed when they got beat 9-2 against Dallas that the message that Andrew Burnett had been trying to get across to them and the process of the system that he wants to run, which the players tell you is a pretty darn complicated system, and it's a little bit different than most teams run. I think that message finally got through after that, and they bought into not only the system but the way they have to play. Like there's a certain way the Predators have to play if they're going to be successful. And I mean, you guys know this. You look at their forward group. Like if you took a screenshot of their 12 forwards that are going to be lining up against Vancouver on Sunday night, like it doesn't terrify you. Like you know, Philip Forsberg is a really good player. You know what Ryan O'Reilly and Gus Nyquist have done this season. Beyond that, I mean, there's not a ton of forwards they have that scare you. So there's a certain way those guys have to play. And I think they finally bought into that, and the results were what they were. I mean, they were 25-3 in their last 28 games to close out the regular season. Obviously, there was a 16-0-2 run in there as well. And the numbers would tell you, I mean, it wasn't a fluke. I mean, they're a top-10 team in generating chances. They've been really good defensively in the second half of the season. And the biggest difference probably from first half to second half is UC Saros was not playing well in goal, and the last couple of months he's looked more like UC Saros. So those combination of things, I think, all kind of turn things around for Andrew Burnett and the Predators.
Is UC Saros the main reason why the Preds could pull an upset?
I think so. I mean, I think when you dig into some of the matchups, when you dig into some of the underlying numbers, I think it's a closer matchup than people actually realize it is. Like I think there's this perception from a league-wide standpoint on the Predators that, you know, UC Saros has been so good for a long time that he's carried them into this. And he's played well, but they've, for the most part, gotten what they deserved over the last couple of months here. They played really well. I mean, the numbers would tell you that they've had the puck for the most part. They've generated a ton of scoring chances, and they're getting the results they need. I think, though, when you're looking at this matchup specifically, Vancouver has done really well against them the last couple of years, and it's going to require UC Saros to play at an elite level if they're going to have a chance to win. And if he doesn't do that, then you're probably looking at a relatively quick series. If he does do that and he does play at an elite level, I think the Predators have a chance to win. And I think you've seen more signs of him playing that way down the second half of the season. It's going to be difficult with a lineup that Vancouver has to continue to do that. But no question about it, if the Predators are going to advance, it's going to require UC Saros playing at the elite level that we've seen him play at for the most part in his career.
We're speaking to Robbie Stanley from 102.5 The Game Sports Talk Radio in Nashville here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Robbie, we've talked a lot about the playoffs on the ice, but off the ice, it's about the atmosphere and the energy. And here in Vancouver, the return of that to the market, there hasn't been a home playoff game here in Vancouver since 2015, so it's been 9 years away. I'm curious about what the energy level and excitement is like in Nashville, because we were there in 2017 for the Stanley Cup Final. We know how frenzied and how much of a party it can be. Where's the energy and excitement level for this team now? Because we mentioned this at the top of the show, There's two new teams in the playoffs this year in the West who didn't make it last year, and they're meeting each other in the first round this year. It's Vancouver and it's Nashville. Nashville missed last year. They're back this year. Where's the energy level like among Preds fans?
I think it's very high, and I think to that point, it got a little spoiled around here, for lack of a better term. I mean, they made the playoffs 8 years in a row, and then they missed out on it last year. And I think when they missed out on it last year, a lot of people were like, oh, wow, this is really cool stuff. Like, we take this for granted. And I think it's a couple of things. It's that, but it's also, like, you know, David Poile was here for a long time, and he did a really good job. And he's the winningest general manager in the history of the National Hockey League. But I do think it reached a point with the team, with the makeup of the team and some of the front office, that it was time for a change. And they brought Andrew Burnett in and replaced John Hines. They brought Barry Trotz in and replaced David Poile. And I think that gave kind of a shot in the arm to the fan base. And you couple that with this team exceeding expectations, people are really excited. I mean, they're really excited for this matchup. They're really excited for playoff hockey returning to Nashville. I mean, it's funny. We were talking about it this morning on our show, how excited it must be in Vancouver with, you know, not having a home playoff game there in a while. I would imagine Rogers Arena is just going to be bonkers in games one and two, and I would expect a similar environment in Nashville.
Has it been a tough couple of years for Tennessee sports? I know the Titans have underperformed. I don't think Vanderbilt ever does well at sports, so I sometimes forget they're in the SEC. But are the Preds like the high point for Tennessee sports right now?
They really are, yeah. I mean, the Titans have the number 7 pick in the draft coming up, and people have talked about as much as you can talk about an offensive lineman that everybody thinks they're going to take. I'm so tired of talking about offensive linemen. So I'm excited that we finally got playoff hockey back, and certainly the fan base around here kind of starving for a winner. It's been a minute since they've had one.
Well, Robbie, we want to thank you for doing this today. Great stuff. We will enjoy the series. I want you to enjoy it as well. Let's touch base mid-series when a few of these games are in the books.
I'd love to, guys. Always appreciate you guys having me on.
Yeah, we appreciate it, too. Robbie. Thanks, Robbie. That's Robbie Stanley from NHL.com and 102.5 The Game in Nashville. They'll sell you a ticket. You show up to the game.
What do you want to talk about?
I'm just excited, man. I'm just really excited.
You don't know.
No, I do. I'm just really excited. No, well, the reason I wanted to ask Robbie those questions at the end there.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's like a bit pandering where it's like, what does the fan base think? Well, like, obviously they're excited, stupid. They're going to the playoffs. But I mentioned off the top that of the 8 Western Conference playoff teams, 6 were there last year. 2 are new entrants, re-debutants, if you will. It's Vancouver and it's Nashville. Here, you know, I understand that it's been a long time. And Shorty, rather eloquently with the anecdote about his son, Will, talking about, like, it's been long, 9 years.
Yeah.
Right? He was
especially the difference, like, when he was 11 compared to what he's an adult now.
He was crying after that loss to the Flames. Bruff was crying, but for other reasons, because he knew what the future had. Now he's in university, right? So it is a long, long time away. And I think, honestly, as we got older and more jaded and, like, our bones started hurting, we're like, I got to wake up for the show again. And you get sort of jaded and caustic, and you shouldn't, because Sunday is going to be so much fun. The moment that the lights go on in Rogers Arena and the puck drops, like, I'm gonna force my kid
who's to watch it. Yeah.
Yeah. Even because, I mean, he's not like a huge hockey fan or anything, but I'm going to be like, just understand that this is what playoff hockey, when dad watches the 82 other games during the regular season and they don't matter as much. This one matters an awful lot. In game one of the playoffs.
Do you think there's a chance he isn't a massive hockey fan, has anything to do with the Canucks not being all that good last little while?
Yeah, not having a playoff game at home in 9 years. And then the one playoff experience, which he watched, you know, quite intently, was in the bubble where there were no fans and there was no atmosphere, no electricity. I'm sure, again, we've been doing this for the better part of 4 decades, following this team, living with the highs and lows. But I think we should also be cognizant of the fact that there's people that haven't. There's people that are younger. There's people that maybe just picked this up. And 9 years is a long time to go without having a playoff game in your own barn. It is. It's a very long time. There's reasons that people talk about the Buffalo Sabres not making the playoffs for 13 consecutive years. And the Detroit Red Wings, an original 6 franchise, you know, the names in the rafters and Howe.
And those fans
thought, Lidstrom and Yzerman.
Those fans thought they'd always be good because they always felt like, oh, we've got the Red Wings way, right? Like, we know, like, it's, don't worry. The people that run this organization, the Red Wings never fall off.
And then we just talked to Robbie Stanley, and he said 1 year away for the Predators, and fans were like, are we taking the good times for granted?
The Penguins are doing their media wrap-ups right now, and Kyle Dubas is having a press conference. And I think if you're a Penguins fan, an honest fan, you're wondering how long is it going to be before we're back in the playoffs?
Yep.
Well, they've missed 2 years in a row now. It's 2 years in a row. And listen, I know that Kyle Dubas is going to work hard to try and reinvigorate the team while Sidney Crosby is still there and while Sidney Crosby is still playing at a high level. But there's no guarantee that he's going to be successful. You know, the Canucks tried to keep the team competitive while the Sedins were still on the Canucks. And not only were they not competitive, they also did lose their culture while the Sedins were still running things.
Sure.
You know, and a lot of it is
don't
just
blame the Sedins for it. It happened.
It is hard to maintain a culture when the talent isn't there.
When you're not winning.
It's a bit of a chicken and egg thing. It's a lot easier to be like, to look around the room and go, oh, we got a pretty good team here. Like, we should really try this year. We should be a little more serious. You know, we should maybe not go out on certain nights. We should really come together as a group and work on things. We should stay on the ice a little bit longer and work on skills, individual or team-wise, when you've got the potential to do good things. But I think most of the people listening here have probably had an experience at their own work where they're looking around and they're going like, I don't even like this company, right? Like, I don't even think we're a great company. So why am I going to go all out on something that, like, I just want to collect my paycheck and be out of here?
Chicken and egg is culture and winning. What comes first? You need to say, like, we set the culture, but you don't really.
Culture and talent, maybe, you know?
There have to be results, right? Like, you can have a great culture, but if you lose, do you have a really good culture? Right? And so now the inverse might be that, well, teams have won with a bad culture before, but it's their culture. It's a winning culture, right? They all look different. Now, here's the interesting thing with regards to the Penguins. I did wonder, and I didn't put it out there, and I hate myself for not putting it out there, but I did wonder if the late season push where they fell just short of the playoffs was going to allow Kyle Dubas to once again relitigate everything. That if we had just played a little bit of better hockey in January, we would have been in the playoffs. And
could just fix the power play.
Because
we would have been in the playoffs.
Because I think, now this is just me completely projecting here, but I think that he wants to keep this train rolling for as long as possible. That being the guy that has to tear it down is not easy and also not fun. The guy that puts the band back together for one more run at it, and while it's going on, it's fun. There's nostalgia. There's Crosby turning the clock back to play like he's 20 years old again. Like, there's some good times there. There's comments coming out of there right now, which lead me to believe that he might talk, and this is Dubas, might talk himself into saying, look, at the end of the day, and he used the Halford look too. Look, at the end of the day, we were so close to making the playoffs, and if we just didn't have that swoon, and if we, in January that he talked about, if we had just sorted out the power play, we would have been a playoff team, and then who knows, right? They got some guys in return for Gensel, and to be honest, maybe they were never going to be able to afford him anyway, but I would not be surprised if the Penguins run it back and try it again. I would not be surprised.
Well, I think they almost have to, don't they?
But, no. Some people thought that the trading of Gensel was the first sign of, okay, we're turning the page and we're moving on and we're turning the chapter.
Define moving on.
Figure out a way to say goodbye to Malkin. Figure out a way to say goodbye to Letang. Sounds like Letang's really banged up, by the way, too, right? And then the only guy you hold on to is Crosby.
What about Carlson?
Find a way to move Carlson. Start those processes.
Yeah, right.
As opposed to, you know, Gino, you're back. Tanger, get healthy. EK65, you're back. We're doing it again next year. Now, Jeff Carter's gone. He retired. Like, he retired the moment that game ended.
Yeah, he's like, I'm done.
He shook everyone's hands. He's like,
he was retiring it, or writing his retirement note on the bench. Yeah. Like, penning it on the bench.
Rick Dhaliwal is going to join us next, and we'll talk about the playoff series versus Nashville. He also wants to touch on Vasily Podkolzin's signings, signing the UFAs. He also noted that he wants to talk about the year for Klimovic. Remember him?
Klimovic? Danila Klimovic. I do remember him.
What's his future? So maybe Rick has something on that. I haven't asked us anything that I'm going to throw out there right now, and then we'll discuss after Rick joins us.
Let it marinate a little bit. Yeah, Let the people hear it and get it out there.
Because there's a little something to this. And I had this discussion with someone over the weekend, and I wanted to bring this up on the show.
Okay.
If you move to Vancouver as an adult, which a lot of people do, the Vancouver region, come here as an adult.
A lot of transplants.
And maybe you came from a different part of Canada where you had a hockey team that you supported and you still support that team. Maybe you came from Alberta or Ontario, Quebec, whatever.
Winnipeg.
Should you raise your children as fans of that team, or should you encourage them to be Canucks fans?
What a question.
We'll throw that out there to the listeners. Rick Dhaliwal will join us next on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.